2 Corinthians chapter 5, and in the first two verses we read, Paul here is writing to the church at Corinth, and we read there, "For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven." During the lifetime of Julius Caesar, the broken ruins of Corinth were suddenly resurrected. We find that there were individuals moving back within her walls, and merchants began to flood her streets. Corinth quickly became a major city once again. But sadly, with the industry of Corinth, there also came terrible idolatry and immorality. And suddenly the Corinthian believers, as they were gathered there in Corinth, they found something appearing before their very eyes. For there they found a huge and momentous temple erected to and dedicated to the worship of the goddess Venus. But don't be deceived, because although this was apparently a religious temple, within her walls were temple priestesses known for their drunkenness and also for their immorality. These priestesses, they quickly left the temple gates and they ran throughout the streets of Corinth. And we find that they quickly peddled their practices throughout the city. Suddenly the sins of drunkenness and immorality and gross sins of idolatry, they became tolerable within the city of Corinth. Now you imagine being a believer at this time and being constantly confronted with this temple, and also constantly met with this ongoing barrage of sin before your very eyes. The believers, they would have been plagued by these sins when they would have faced these sins day after day. But Paul, however, now turning to the Corinthian believers, he spoke to them in terms of a different temple or of a different tabernacle. In verse 1, we see him addressing the believers, the Corinthian believers, and he speaks to them concerning their natural frames or their bodies. And what does he do? In verse 1, he calls them tabernacles or temples. And he then proceeds in these following verses on through into verse 7 and following to show them that their bodies, their tabernacles, something would happen to them one day. Their frames, their earthly frames, their earthly tabernacles as they knew it would be dissolved. They would be dismantled. And we then find in verse 2, they would eventually be remade. He stated, "be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven." And what he was simply saying was this. He was saying, look, as you're confronted with these sins day and daily, as you walk past the temple and as you see them going on and you know the practices inside that temple, you're to look away to a far greater house. You're to look away to that time when one day God will come, he will dismantle your earthly frame, and in glory he will give to you a house. And he was speaking to them of their resurrection body, and he called it a house. And he was simply saying this, don't look around and don't be so perplexed and plagued with what you see around you and the sins and all that would discourage you. But rather look up, because one day your earthly body, yes, it will be dissolved, it will be dismantled, but you'll be given a body, you'll be given a house, a home, and it will last forever. It will never perish. It will never be dismantled. It will never decay. It will be with the Lord. It will be eternal. They would have a glorious, sinless body in heaven. You see, whilst you may never move house in this life, yet you will if you're a believer in the next. One day, as these verses tell us, verses 1 and 2, you will be given a house. One day when you perish, and then the Lord returns, your body, your tabernacle, your tent, it will be taken and it will be changed. It will be changed into a glorious body, a sinless body, as Paul describes it here, an eternal body, a body that will never rot, will never perish, and more importantly, will be sinless. Verse 2 states, we will be clothed upon with a house from heaven. Paul also reminds us in 1 Corinthians of this. And in 1 Corinthians 15, we read in verse 52, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. What is he saying here? We'll be changed. That which was sown in corruption will be raised in incorruption. Oh, what a thought, believer. As you go on through life, and as you live, and perhaps you even feel that you live in a modern day Corinth, and you're so presented with these sins, and they're flagrant, and they rise up, and you face them day and daily, and you know what I mean, the difficulties that this society presents you with. Oh, what's Paul saying to you today? He's saying to you, as he said to the believers, look up. Look up. Because one day, you will be taken from this earth. One day you will enter heaven. You'll be given a new body. And it will be free from all that would hinder, all that would discourage you in this life. Paul takes up the theme of the body here. And he, as it were, draws us a picture. He draws us a portrait of the body. And this morning in these verses, I want us simply to consider Paul's portrait of the body. Paul's portrait of the body. I want you to see firstly here the disintegration of the body. The disintegration of the body. Verse 1 we read, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Paul speaks here of the earthly tabernacle being dissolved. What is he speaking about here? He's speaking about your earthly frame. He's speaking about your body. How does he describe the body? Well, he describes the body in very, very interesting terms. He calls it something special. He calls it a tabernacle. Now, why does he call it a tabernacle? Well, the word in the original, it means a tent. And, of course, you think about a tent. A tent is a temporary dwelling. It is something that is not permanent. For example, whenever the congregation here acquired the plot in the 80s, I'm told, I wasn't here, I wasn't born then, but I'm told there was a gospel tent mission here on this site. But, of course, that the tent erected there was only meant to be a temporary thing. Then, of course, builders came and they erected this structure, which is more permanent. You even think of the travelers or those who go mountain climbing. What do? They camp out in tents. It's something temporary. They don't intend to live there. It is something temporary. And Paul, in describing the body as a tabernacle or as a tent, he was describing the temporal nature of the body. What does he then say about the tent or the tabernacle? Well, he then proceeds in verse 1 to say, we have this earthly house, this tabernacle, where dissolved. The word here, dissolved, it means to demolish, to be dismantled or be overthrown completely. The picture in your mind is this, that here's a tent and it is erected. But then a storm comes and a storm blows upon that tent. And the tent, it disintegrates, it is destroyed. It pictures the idea of something frail, of something fragile. And of course, that's exactly what a tent is. It's something frail, it's something that's not made to last. And Paul takes this picture then. The picture of the tent being dissolved, being dismantled, being destroyed really quite easily. And he says, believers, this is just what your body's like. Your body is just so frail, it could be easily dismantled, it could be taken down, it could be dissolved in a moment. And so you're not to put too much stock in these earthly things. Rather, you are to lift your eyes and lift your gaze towards the heavens. You see, even the best of bodies are but bodies at best. They are but tents which can easily be dismantled. That's something for us all to keep in mind. Remember how frail and how fragile you are. Remember that although you may be in the best of health currently, or you perhaps may feel strong and robust and feel ready to take on the world, Paul, Lord, is reminding you today that you're not to get too attached to the earthly things, because your body, it's just a tent. It could be easily dissolved. The Lord is teaching you here that every day you're just a hairbreadth away from entering glory. And even if you're not saved this morning, it teaches you something very, very solemn. Oh, how frail things are for you. How fragile. Your body, it's just a tent, and the Lord could easily dismantle it. And what a terrible thing it would be to have the body dismantled and the soul to perish in a Christless eternity. Job reminds us of the frailty of the body. In Job 4, verse 19, he asks the question, he makes the statement rather, how much less in them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth. Job uses pictures here. He speaks about the house of clay. You picture it. A house made of clay. Clay is something, a material which is not made to withstand weather. It's something which is soft, something which is pliable, something which is easily molded. What did Job say? He says, this old body of mine, it's just a house of clay. But he then takes the picture on and he states it's a house of clay whose foundation is in the dust. Can you picture it? A house made out of clay on a foundation of dust. Something that is not stable at all. And as if to add to the picture, he then stated, which are crushed before the moth. And what Job's saying is this. He's saying that our bodies, they're so frail, they're so fragile. It's as if they're made of clay, and it's as if they just have a foundation that's dust. And a little moth could just come along, a little frail, a little fragile moth, and knock into that house, and it would completely be dismantled. Oh, how frail the body is. You see, the frame is not durable, the frame is delicate. And it can be easily dismantled by God in a moment. That reminds you, believer, this morning, you're not to get too attached to the things of the old frame, the things of this world, because they could be taken from you in an instant. Those earthly things that you perhaps hold to so dear and you cling to and you fasten to, God is saying, look, your earthly tabernacle, it's just a tent. And I could dismantle it. I could take it down just in a moment. Someone once came to John Quincy Adams and they said, well, Mr. Adams, how are you? He said, well, I'm very well, thanks. But you know, John Quincy Adams, his old house that he lives in, it's going old. The thatch is wearing thin and it trembles in every storm. I think very soon John Quincy Adams will have to move out. But I myself, I'm very well, sir, thank you. And he was saying to that person, look, this old house of mine, this old tent of mine, I can feel it dissolving. I can feel the Lord taking it apart. And he said very soon he was going to have to move out. Very soon he was going to have to move home. Oh, the disintegration of the body. But I want you to know, secondly here, the affliction within the body. The affliction within the body. In verse 4 we read, for we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. In verses 2 and verse 4 you'll discover Paul taking up a theme. He takes up the theme of groaning. He states, in this tabernacle, we groan. And what he's saying is, look, in this tent of ours, in this body of ours, we groan. What does the word groan mean? Well, the word refers to an inward sighing. It wasn't that the Corinthian believers were going about during their daily routine and groaning and sighing outwardly and cursing their days and cursing even the day that they were born. No, this is not what it means. It means inwardly. Inwardly there was this groaning. Inwardly there was this sighing. Imagine it. They're surrounded by immorality, surrounded by drunkenness, surrounded by idolatry. They're subject to the miseries and pains of life, and so inwardly there is this groaning, this yearning to be with Christ. Again, the word in verse 4, being burdened, it means to be pressed in the inside. And it was as if they were carrying a huge weight, the pressures of life internally. They were weighing them down. They faced pressures on the outside, and so they were being weighed down, feeling pressed on the inside. You see, whilst life has its triumphs, it also has its troubles. It can leave you feeling pressed down on the inside. You see, because life is marked with frailty, with uncertainty, with difficulty, with complexity, sometimes we can feel like the believers in Corinth, pressed down on the inside. We face sin and we groan on the inside. There is this yearning within us, this groaning within us to leave, as it were. We would say, like David in the Psalms, "Oh, that I had the wings of a dove, that I might fly away." Sometimes we just feel like this. But of course, the pressures of life, when we feel as if the walls are closing in, the Bible is replete with reminders that life would be like this. And if you've been here on earth, you'll know for any length of time, you'll know that you don't really need anybody to tell you that. There is trials, there are problems, there are difficulties, and you can feel pressed down on the inside. Job often takes up this theme. For example, in Job 5 verse 7, he states, "Man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward." The word spark, it refers to a bird of prey. And what is Job saying? He's saying, look, just as a bird of prey, as it is natural for the bird of prey to fly upward before it swoops down upon its prey, just as it's natural for a spark, for a bird to fly upward, so man is born unto trouble. In other words, it's natural. It's natural. It's natural for man to go through life and to have pain and trouble. Again, Solomon reminds us in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 23, "All his days are sorrows, and his travail, grief." You see, even for the believer, there is no fleeing difficulty, but facing difficulty. You will always have to face up to or encounter trials. Oh, there's always that inward, not always, but often there is that inward groaning, that inward feeling of being pressed down. Yes, from pressures without, just like the believers, there's this inward groaning, this yearning just to depart, this yearning to leave off the body and to enter the presence of glory. You know, there was a preacher who lost his family in a tragic fire. He had a wife and two children, and he was just feeling like the Corinthian believers here. He was feeling pressed down on the inside, and he felt like abandoning the Lord altogether. He went for a walk. He asked himself questions like, why did God allow this? Why am I going through this terrible trial? As he walked through his local town, he walked past the local cathedral, and he noticed that there were men who were doing some restoration work in the cathedral. He saw a man that was doing something very interesting. He was on the ground floor, and he was working with, he was carving a triangle out of granite with a chisel and a hammer. And he stopped the man, and he said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm carving this little piece." And he said, "Why are you doing it?" And the man came to him, and he pointed to the preacher, and he said, "If you look up there to the very top spire, you'll see a tiny triangle. An open triangle near the top of the roof. And the preacher said, yes, I see it. Well, the workman said, I'm carving this out down here so that it will fit in up there. And you know, the preacher then understood what the Lord was doing in his life. He was carving him down here that he might fit him for up there. And remember that, believer. Why do the trials and afflictions and the feelings of being pressed down come? Well, the Lord, he carves you and he cuts you down here to conform you for up there. He's fitting you for higher service. Remember that. That whenever you're saved and the Holy Spirit enters within you, God begins a work of sanctification in your life. And he continues it. And he then completes it when you enter glory. The disintegration of the body, the affliction of the body. I want you to see thirdly here the transformation of the body. Verses 1 and 2 we read, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven. Paul reminded the Corinthian believers, firstly, that their bodies, they were just tents, that they were tabernacles, and so they were temporal. But then he went on to speak of something more permanent. He said in these verses that we have an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. The concept of a tent is temporary. But the concept of a house or a home is permanent. You think of your house or your home. It's somewhere where you live. It's somewhere where you dwell. There's a permanency about that. And Paul, he was saying here that their house, their resurrection body, it was prepared by God, and they would live within it and reside within it forever, eternally in the heavens. What was he saying? He was saying someday there's going to be a transformation. Someday the tent will be dissolved, the tent will be dismantled, and you will become a house, a body. Your body will be reunited with the soul. It will be permanent. It will not decay and it will not be dismantled. And what an encouragement this would have been to them as they suffered affliction in the body, as they were confronted day and daily with sin, and as they perhaps endured terrible miseries in life. Paul was saying one day there's going to be a change. One day the soul, when Christ returns, will be reunited with the body, and it will be a new body, another body not subject to death, not subject to trials, not subject to dismantling. You see, whilst in this world you suffer affliction, in the next you experience transformation. You're given a new body, free from death and decay. Yes, in this old life and in your old body and your old tent, there's the bruises, there are the buffetings, there are the very, very timely reminders that it is just temporal. Oh, but what a thought. In an instant, when Christ returns, the soul will be reunited with your body and it will enter into glory. It will be changed in the twinkling of an eye. It will be sinless. It will be a celestial body, and it will be a body just like unto Jesus Christ's. What a thought. What a thought. In Luke 21, Christ was telling his disciples about the end time, and he states that in the end there'll be wars, there'll be pestilence, there'll be famine. And he makes this interesting statement, and the end is not yet. The end is not yet. In other words, he's saying when you hear of rumors of wars and famine and pestilence and all of these things, the end is not yet. And in that context, he then stated that whenever these things would happen, the wars, the famine and so on, he stated in Luke 21 verse 28, when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. And he was speaking here about the redemption of the body. What was he saying? When you see these things and you begin to tremble and you begin to fear, you're not to do that. You're to lift up your heads and look up, for Christ will return and take you body and soul to be with him. You see, with the return of Christ comes not the redemption of the soul, but the redemption of the body. Your body will be redeemed and reunited with your soul. Yes, all around you there's much to perplex, much to cause panic, much to press you in the inside. But what's Paul saying to you, and even Christ saying to you today? Don't worry. Lift up your heads. I think that's an interesting thing. Their heads must have been down. They must have been focusing on that which was earthly. Lift up your heads and look unto him. Look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. You'll be given a new body that Christ died for in the atonement at Calvary. You know, in the old world, sailors, they would leave the Straits of Gibraltar and they would venture out into the Mediterranean Sea. And after a while, when they would venture out into the Mediterranean Sea, they would come to the conclusion, when they saw nothing, that that was the end of the world as they knew it. And they came back to the Rock of Gibraltar. And they crawled into a little cave, and they inscribed in that little cave, in Latin, Ne plus ultra. That means there's nothing beyond. They felt as if that was the end of the world. There was nothing beyond that. But then Christopher Columbus came, and he went and he explored and he discovered the Americas and so on. And whenever news broke then to these sailors in and around the Mediterranean, what did they do? They went back to that little cave and they scribbled out the word ne. And now it reads plus ultra, more beyond. And child of God, after this world, rather than being no more beyond, there is far more beyond. A glorious transformation awaits you. The body will be changed. The disintegration of the body, the affliction of the body, the transformation of the body. But I want you to see lastly here the position from the body. The position from the body. Verses 6 and 7 we read, therefore we are always confident, knowing that whilst we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. The phrase always confident, it means always having good courage. The thought here is of not having fear, of not having dread. Yes, the believers in Corinth had plenty to make them discouraged, plenty to make them fear, but Paul said they shouldn't. I want you to see the change now in their position or in their perception. They were to feel at home in the body. At home in the sense of being content. Being content with their lot of life. Paul had been speaking about their eternal house that they one day would have, and in light of this, they should feel themselves content here on earth. They need not worry. They need not fear. What was their duty? It was simply to walk by faith and not by sight. Be faithful. Serve the Lord. Walk with him in all that they would face and in all that would surround them. Knowing that one day their bodies would be changed. They would have their eyes on their home in heaven. You see, the thought of a resurrection body should bring faith to the believer, not fear. It should stir you to walk by faith and not by sight. You need not worry. Child of God, you need not fear this morning. This is going to give you strength. This is going to give you courage. You can say, well, they can do whatever they want to this old tabernacle and this old body of mine, because one day it's going to be changed anyway. You can say, I can face tomorrow because I know he lives today. What a thought, child of God. And what a thought that Paul sets before these discouraged believers. a portrait of the body. He was saying the body is going, it's dissolving. And one day it'll give way to change. One day this heavenly this earthly tabernacle will become a heavenly home. And in light of that, you're to walk by faith and not by sight. May God bless his word to your hearts this morning.